This episode of Shutters Inc. is brought to you by Hedge for Mac, your best resource for data backup on OS X. It's the fastest, safest backup routine for your video, photo, and audio assets with full bit-perfect copy and verification. Go to hedgeformac.com/shuttersinc for more info and to obtain a 20% discount exclusively for Shutters Inc. listeners.
This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 337 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from Melbourne, once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
I'd like to apologise to the listeners.
For?
Tonight's episode.
Just getting in early, are we?
Just in general, yeah. You know, we tried everything we could, but we still managed to get together to talk. You know, I'm sure there'll be something through the course of that little chat that we'll say something. You'll probably say something offensive. You'll make a reverent remark like you normally do. You'll offend someone like, well, you offended Steve Peters recently. There'll be something you'll do. I just know it. It's just going to, I'm going to have to pull back and say, look, no, Bruce didn't really mean it. Well, you probably, you know, it's just who he is. That's all we're going to have to deal with. So let's just get it out there early. Bruce, apologise.
Yeah, because I'm the loose cannon on this. Exactly. Right. How has your week been?
My week has been a week.
Right. A week, week, right.
A week, week, yes. Right. I might not be able to make you... No, I won't do that joke. It's been mostly uneventful.
Right.
But no time to do anything. Isn't that funny how that happens?
Oh, okay.
You don't seem to ever have any time to, you know, sit down and do the boring stuff you know you have to do, where you can kind of avoid watching, doing anything by watching shows and stuff on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, those kind of things.
So have you been doing?
Well, I don't know. I found a new app for my Microsoft Surface.
Oh, okay.
Which streams. So it's like a Netflix kind of thing. So it does all like TV shows and movies and everything else, but it's all completely free.
Okay.
And
totally not legit.
Well, it must be legal because it was available as a download from the Microsoft App Store.
Right.
So therefore, all I've done is download an app that Microsoft have put out there as legally available.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, they've vetted it and approved it.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not my fault. I just turn on and all of a sudden there's all these shows that I know I shouldn't have access to. So I highly recommend people don't get onto Cinebox. That's Cinebox because... I'm sure there's something not quite kosher about it.
Possibly fell off the back of a truck.
Well, there's a little tiny banner advert at the top, so you see you're paying for it, you know. Right. You can hardly see the banner, you know. So that's kind of, you know, because I've been, yeah.
So doing that's my, ruined your week.
I've been doing my in-depth investigative journalism on that, you know. Had to watch both movies and series and see if you can do the entire series. So I sat in bed on Sunday. I was a bit sick on Sunday, a bit of man flu, not the deathly kind, just the close to death kind.
Yeah.
So I sort of binged watched on an entire series of a TV show in bed on this app on my Surface.
Nice.
So that was good. But I had a workshop on Saturday, and it was the first workshop that's been rained out in forever.
Right.
But fortunately, it was a flash workshop, right. So we could shoot indoors without any real major drama. And because of that, I sort of started doing stuff we don't normally do in my normal Flash 1 workshop. So we're doing some multiple Flash stuff. We're using the room as a big softbox and firing flashes up into the top corner of a room and creating different types of light and just experimenting with different types of light. Firing light up into a big plastic tub.
I saw that. That was great.
It's made the world's biggest softbox. Well, not softbox, Flash diffuser box. Yeah. Like the Gary Fong diffusers. Yeah, well, I mean, I was coming in because the place where I leased from, they're moving out. So they had all this stuff downstairs, including these plastic containers. So as I was coming in, I go, what? Flash diffuser. That's an idea for the day. Yeah. But the light was fabulous out of it.
Yeah, it was.
As typical of those things, you had to power the thing right up just to get any flash. Power out of because you're going through all that translucent plastic and firing light in every possible direction.
Yeah.
But pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So we had some fun. I'm kind of dreading this Saturday's workshop. It's natural light workshop and they're forecasting 14 degrees and rain.
Oh, jeez.
I can get away with flash indoors, but, bland light coming through a bit of window, it's hard to shoot for 4 hours.
If I know you, you'll just find a narrow opening of a doorway somewhere and you'll work it.
Well, there's an idea. But here's the thing. I mean, every shoot's going to be, I'm going to be slowing down. And
why?
Every single shot, because if I've only got like 5 shots to do for the entire day because of the
weather. Oh, I see. Right.
Every shot. But we're going to take a good 50 minutes on this one. Let's really analyze it. Let's look at the hair follicles in this one, people. You'll notice hair follicle number 3,712 is slightly out of place. So I'm kind of not looking forward to that.
Right.
So that's kind of all I've done photographically this week is that, that workshop. And I've been planning, me and my mate Malcolm, we've been getting ourselves organised for next year, for all our tours for next year.
Oh, cool.
And our Zaindabad tour, unfortunately, workshop's going to have to be postponed.
Oh, which you were aiming for February, I think.
Exactly. So the problem is that the only window of opportunity we had to do it, where both our availability and the weather was suitable.
Right.
Is the area where we're going to do it, a few weeks ago, recorded the fourth hottest ever recorded temperature on the planet.
Oh, what?
So,
And just how hot was that?
It was 52 degrees.
Oh, that's in the nasty.
Shade, in the shade, of course, yeah. So there's a limited time frame when we can, both our availability and temperature-wise.
Yeah, right.
So it was really only the last couple of weeks of Feb that was available to us.
Yeah, right.
And we've got the dates from the guy. It was all good. I mean, it was going to be like the 21st to the 28th of February, something like that. It was the week was going to be, and it was all great. And then he came back about 2 hours after he got the date through to me. He goes, oh, I forgot. We have 50 students in the dorm for 45 days from middle of January till middle of March. Is that going to be a problem when we're trying to get the place to ourselves for the whole thing? We wanted the entire place to ourselves because it's really, you know, the dynamic is very different when other people are there. And so the whole thing's going to put up till 2018 now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, what can you do? You know, it's just if it's not available, it's not available, and we're not available any other time. So
yeah, right.
Put down 12. But we are looking at maybe replacing it with a workshop in Myanmar instead.
Oh, nice.
To hang out in Bagan for a week and do some stuff there. So
wow.
That could be a good alternative for next year.
Yeah, right.
And we've just we're about to put on for a store in LA Italy and France tour.
Wow,
should be nice. It'll be for in May, which will be nice. We've got Cuba.
I'll be there 2 months later.
Really?
Yeah.
We got Cuba in March. We've got Italy and France in May, and then we're doing East Africa in August. And then India with the Pushkar Camel Fair in October. That's kind of our year.
Wow.
Of tours.
That's crazy.
So, Milena, Cuba, March. Don't forget. Okay, so she's coming. I think I come. It was either having a butt enlargement or coming to Cuba were the two options she had. I said, you can sit in your butt any old time. Come to Cuba. Well, there was some medical thing. I can't remember what it was. So it was something. Possibly it wasn't the butt enlargement, but it was something. Right. There was some mention of something. All the details. Malcolm's off to Namibia next week. So
right.
When he comes back from that, we'll have the we'll do the rest.
Jeez, he was there only 6 months ago, wasn't he?
Cuba. Yeah. Yeah.
Namibia.
Yeah, well, maybe a bit more than that.
Okay.
I don't know. Right. Recently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he's off there again. And then, that's our plans. That's the other thing I've been sort of organising, is that kind of stuff during the week.
Right.
Which is good. I've heard you had a bit of rain up your way.
Just a little bit.
Twinkle of rain.
Eh?
And the odd twinkle of rain and a few buildings falling into the ocean.
Yeah, certainly the northern suburbs of Sydney really copped it. We did get some very heavy rain here, and anyone who's followed it will know that there was a combination of a massive low-pressure system off the east coast of Australia, and it just happened to coincide with what was scheduled to be a king tide. The stuff we've seen just in our neck of the woods here at Terrigal and Avoca was just phenomenal. You know, Terrigal Beach is normally about 20 or 30 metres from the front of the surf club, like where the beach starts, down to the waterline. And then from the front of the surf club, you've then got another 20 or 30 metres back over a fairly flat footpath area to the first street, which runs parallel with the beach. And there was video of people driving along and their cars being hit by waves.
Wow. What were they doing driving?
People are idiots. Rubbernecking, basically.
People are just idiots. Huh?
Yeah.
And then the car, oh, I didn't expect the wave to come over and sweep.
It was just crazy. And at Avoca Beach, the car park beside the Surf Life Saving Club at Avoca Beach is probably 3 meters in elevation up from the waterline, and again, probably about 40 meters back from the beach. And that car park is now completely full of sand.
Man.
Where the ocean has just brought the beach up to the car park. it's pretty crazy. But I think the rainfall was actually heaviest up sort of around southeast Queensland. I read of places that got 400 millimetres in a day.
Crazy.
Which is, 8 inches in the old language. Just crazy. Crazy stuff. And the funny thing was, Kath and I had organised, because we had a child-free weekend last weekend.
Oh, really?
So we'd organised to go down to Sydney on Saturday afternoon, booked into a hotel across the road from where I work because I could leave the car at my workplace where it was secure. And we were going to go into town, take my camera gear, we were going to meet up with Rakesh and his wife and have dinner with them, and then we were going to go and photograph Vivid because the Vivid Festival is on in Sydney.
And what's, for those who don't know, what's the Vivid Festival?
Okay, it's a festival of light and colour where
they light up buildings.
They light up the Opera House and Customs House at Circular Quay and the Museum of Contemporary Art, the Harbour Bridge. And the Vivid Festival has grown over the years and it's now expanded. There's now installations.
Now that, really vivid.
Yeah, it's all over the city. You know, there's Darling Harbour, there's stuff out at Chatswood, there's stuff going on up in the Botanic Gardens. And so we caught up with Rakesh and his wife for dinner. Didn't rain a drop while we were at dinner. We left dinner, said, okay, let's walk from here, which is Darling Harbour, over to Circular Quay, which is probably 3 kilometres. Walked all that way under dry skies, but heavy overcast. And seriously, we got to within about 200 metres of where I was going to take photos of the Opera House, and it just opened up and we ended up sheltering underneath the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which, for those who don't know it, it has 8 traffic lanes and a railway line running across it, so it's a fairly wide bridge, and we were standing right under the middle of it and we were getting drenched.
Wow.
Because the rain was just coming in sideways. So yeah, so I think I shot 2 frames and just went, nah, this isn't even worth attempting.
So now a real photographer would have found an opportunity to shoot in that and capture some stunning, amazing images that no one else has got.
Maybe.
But Bruce, I don't want to get my hair wet.
It wasn't that. It was you just couldn't keep the rain off the front of the lens.
Yeah, which once again, Peter Eastway, well-known Australian photographer, went to Iceland. It rained every day.
Good on him.
Just rained and rained and rained. And he had a choice, Bruce, to sit in his bloody hotel room and go, I don't got my lens to get wet. Or he got in a car and drove and used the water flowing down the windows as an element in his sort of unusual, I'm trying to think of the word, it's an illusionist kind of landscape stuff.
Right.
He made an opportunity out of something that was just adverse.
Fantastic.
But Bruce.
He's a better man than me.
Well, we all are, Bruce, but still. Except for those who aren't, of course.
That's right.
That's very much true.
Shall we
look at them? Are they?
Oh, yeah. No.
No.
We all do
photos like that, don't we?
So it was a bit of a whitewash. So we ended up just, walking back in the rain to Circular Quay and jumping on our respective trains and heading home.
I saw some footage of one of the ferries on Sydney Harbour going up these massive waves and down these massive waves.
Yeah, right. Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
Not much fun at all, yeah.
Yeah, so that was my photographic adventure for the week.
Who needs that? Now, I've got a question to ask you.
Yeah.
If you go into a garden centre, it's got a glass house. You know what a glass house is in garden centres?
Yeah.
And you walk in there and there's a big sign saying, don't throw stones. And you throw stones anyway.
Right.
Do you expect to get kicked out?
Yes.
Okay. That's hypothetical question number one. If you see a sign on the side of the street saying no parking.
Yeah.
And you choose to park.
Yeah.
And you get a ticket. Are you surprised?
Well, I wouldn't be.
Right. If you are speeding along above the speed limit in front of a police car, are you surprised if they pull you over and book you?
No.
Right. Then why the hell is my news feed on Facebook so constantly bombarded with people complaining that the nude photo they put up has been taken down by Facebook when it's in direct contravention of Facebook's bloody rules? No nudity.
Okay.
Well, just,
so now we know the type of people that Glyn follows on Facebook.
But it's just, you know, but... You know, you can't complain. Put them up there if you want to, fine, but don't complain when they take them down. Don't bleat and get in a huff. I'm going to take my images somewhere else. Well, yes, they want you to do that.
Do that.
They don't want you.
Put them on 500px and post a link to your 500px profile. That it's simple, people.
It doesn't matter if it's art. I'd love a good art nude. I do. Yeah. Bruce, I do.
Yeah.
But you got to follow the rules of the environment you're in. And I just...
When in Rome.
It just got my goat up this week a little bit. That's all. I saw it happened a few times and people started complaining and this isn't the first time this has happened. Well, maybe take the hint. anyway. That's just my statement of the bleeding obvious, you know. And I'm not talking women breastfeeding in public. I'm not going down that slippery slide. I'm simply talking about you do an art nude photo or... What you think is art nude but is actually just like really horrible. Yeah, put it up there on social media, you get what you get, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, exactly.
So, what have we got for the weekend? The excitement?
I've got a couple of bits and pieces.
Do you, Bruce?
I do. I came across, where did I come across this? I think, I'm sure it appeared in my Facebook feed, but not from one of the normally accepted photographic feeds, although it is on popular photography. I don't know where I found it. Anyway, this was a link to a 1958 documentary about Ansel Adams. It's a pretty rough old copy. It looks like somebody's videotaped or stuck their video camera in front of a TV that was playing the documentary. It's kind of got that... You know, shot in a cinema kind of look to it. But it's a 20-minute doco on Ansel Adams and his, you know, just his life and his process and everything.
Apparently, it's a rather fascinating look.
Allegedly. I haven't had a chance to watch it all. I saw about the first 5 minutes of it. And I have been meaning to get back to watch the rest of it. I just haven't got there yet.
It is in HD, according to the thing. Yeah. Because a bad quality footage.
Because I stuck my 4K camera in front of the cinema screen.
Upgrade to 4K makes it so good.
Oh, yeah, so
good. So but, you've gone crazy this week and come up with one thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Marvelous.
Carl came up with two things.
Did he?
Yes.
He's twice the man you are.
Apparently so. So the first one was Sigma's...
taking more than two photos in the rain too.
Yeah, you may have done, I don't know. This was on Petapixel, and this is Sigma's 50 to 100mm f1.8 art lens.
That's quite remarkable, isn't it?
That is phenomenal.
When you, it's basically like 80 to 160 or something like that.
Yeah, right.
It's an APS-C
lens.
Thing.
Yeah.
So, 160, 1.8.
That's a pretty epic portrait lens.
In a zoom, which is... quite remarkable.
Yeah. So. Like we know that focal length is affected by the crop value of the sensor.
Yes.
Is aperture affected in any similar fashion?
Yes.
How?
You get less depth, you get more depth of field at any given aperture, the smaller the sensor goes.
Right.
So if you compare 1.8 shot on an APS-C size sensor versus 1.8 shot on a 35mm size sensor versus 1.8 shot on a 645 sensor, they're all different. And then so narrower
if,
the bigger the sensor gets.
If the math roughly equates to APS-C being approximately 1.5x for focal length, Does it effectively mean that an f1.8 is like 1.5 extra stops of aperture on a 35 mil sensor?
Ugly if I know.
Right. Okay.
I wouldn't think so.
Right.
But it might.
Well, what would one stop from 1.8 be? That'd be...
It'd be 2.6, something like that, give or take.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not good at math, except the math I'm good at.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's very nice. But there is a noticeable difference, which is why, if you like doing macro work, it's probably easier to do with a smaller sensor cam and the bigger sensor cam.
Right, because you get the more depth of field. Yeah.
Which is why I can get better macro with my iPhone than I can with my 5D.
Nice. So allegedly this lens should be out now. The Petapixel article said April of 2016 with a price tag of $1,099, which presumably is American dollars, probably about $5,000 Australian.
Don't be so sarcastic.
The second story that Carl sent us was from Slate.com, and it's called How Things Break. And it's about Muhammad Ali fighting, was it Sonny Liston?
Sonny Liston. The photo, here we go. Number one, the photo. He snapshot of the bout, knew it, he could only watch while other photos filled the prominent pages, his own work failing to make the cover. Lifer must have been crestfallen because he'd taken an artistic risk that night in May. Specifically, he went out and loaded Kodak's latest Ektachrome film into his Rolleiflex medium format, which is an overly way of saying that Lifer was shooting in color. Lifer was known for his excessive preparations.
Right.
So basically, because he took the photo in color.
And yet... I think every time I've seen that photo, it's been the black and white version.
Like, there you go.
I don't think I ever realised that there was a colour version of that photo available. Not that I'm one for watching boxing anyway.
No, it's a barbaric bloody thing.
Yeah.
but that photo was, it's the thing, it was lost for years. It was sort of hidden and not recognised for the image that it was and that it was shot in colour.
Wow.
There's other people's version, the black and white one. And I've got to say, his shot better anyway, even just because his angle is down lower, looking up.
I see. So it's not the same shot. Right.
It's not the same shot. No, there's other photographers that they're shooting. And if you look at the back of the black and white shot, there's photographers everywhere.
Yeah.
Around it and shooting away. But his one's just is that little bit more, just a little bit lower angle, shooting up just a little, maybe. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. So the black and white was shot by someone called Rooney.
Yeah, and world famous, and his colour one, which obviously is, But you have to think, in 1965, how many people have had the ability to print it in colour as well and and show it. Yeah, like the newspapers wouldn't have been doing colour image front covers.
No. Well, they wouldn't have been doing anything in colour, would they?
That's what I'm thinking. They might. I don't know. They might be
front page ad, or otherwise.
Nice.
It all would have been monochrome.
I don't know. I remember when they went to colour back and when I was a young lad, they made the paper green. So
right. Everything
rather than changing the colour of the photo, the pictures, they just make the paper green or yellow.
So instead of black and white, you can have black and green.
Exactly.
Fantastic. We heard from David Marland through the week.
Did we?
Yes, we did. And he said, I thought this might be a bit of fun for the show. I've always wondered why there are so many cat photos on the internet and why people are attracted to them.
But hang on a sec. I'm picking up two cats myself this coming Sunday.
Why?
Be prepared, because one each for each of the kids. So be prepared. Right. I'm going to start bombarding
this gonna be
my own cat. Edmund also has got the damn things. I think I better do it myself. It's obviously, I'll start running cat photography workshops.
The only thing that I can say that, you know, is going to be a good thing is they'll be the best lit cat photos on the internet.
Oh, so this guy's gone and done the Fibonacci swirl. But you know, it's just going to show that if you point stuff and you make the curve the certain big enough size and shape,
yeah, that's right.
You can fit just about everything into that. You know. Yeah. Oh, look, this if I found a photo with a cat with a curve on it. Right. If I put a Fibonacci, it didn't work. Okay, I won't show that one. Where's one? Oh, that one works. I'll show that one.
Yes, cats don't tend to follow straight lines.
No.
Particularly when they're asleep.
Yeah, they tend to curve up a bit, and there you go. So, okay, I'll be putting the Fibonacci test to trial next week when I get the kitty cats.
So what sort of cats are you getting?
Oh, two little 10-week-old little ginger fluffy things.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
don't know what we're doing to ourselves, but still.
Anyway, David Marlin continues, it raises the question, did Leonardo Fibonacci really invent his approximation for the golden signal, or is it a plot by cats to convince us they are cute and attractive?
That's right, and they're perfectly balanced.
Might be worth triggering a discussion about a whole lot of compositional rules. Do you make a photograph using the rules, or do you make a photograph and then it seems to fit the rules? Best regards, David Marlin.
Well, I think that's what they've done with the photos of the cats. They've gone on the internet, found enough photos of cats, put the thing over the top, and the ones that work.
Yeah.
It's like any you can go and get any survey, and if you skew the data,
that's right.
Damn well, once
you can make the numbers say whatever you like.
Every cat photo ever taken is Fibonacci swirl, except the ones that aren't. just don't show the ones that aren't. Yeah. Do you take a photo? Well, what rules again? You know. Photograph with emotional interest, and the things will be where the things are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make the photograph interesting. And if it happens to follow some scientific rule, well, that's all well and good. If it doesn't, well, that's all well and good. As long as the photo's interesting, who really cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just a little bit tired of the old paint by numbers. I just remember I did do something else photographically this week.
Yeah.
I went up to the Yarra Valley Yarra Rangers Photographic Society and did a talk.
Oh,
and
it was
like about a 2.5-hour drive up the country for that, and that was rather nice. But just talking about rules, once again, that sort of I go on quite a bit about that at rules. But I found that a lot of camera clubs, speakers at camera clubs of late, have been sort of trying to go off the rules, stop talking about the rules.
Oh, okay.
So maybe there's a bit of a groundswell happening out there where, people are saying, it kind of works a bit, but, look at everything else that's important.
Yeah.
And so that seems to be maybe a little bit of a trend that's happening. Who knows?
Right. Now, there was one – I realised that there was one thing I didn't put in the rundown.
Didn't you?
No.
What's that, Bruce?
It was because I had it on an email and I hadn't added it to my little text document. And it was this one that I was thinking of that hadn't come via my usual channels of photographic content. And I thought this was really cool. This was on Sploid, which is a Gizmodo site.
Sploid.
It's a photograph, or what appears to be a photograph of a wolf sitting in a howling position, but it's actually three models covered in body paint. And there's a little animated GIF or video that shows them coming apart after the image has been shot. And, man, it's so well done.
It is well done.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Somebody have way too much time on their hands.
But there's an advert like that here on television here in Australia. It shows how well the advert works. I don't actually know what the company's – what it's advertising.
Right.
But it's like they have this elephant painted against a wall,
and you can't see it
until the elephant starts to move. And there's another one where they've got a car painted the same as, and you can't see the car until it starts to move. And people start walking off in other versions of it, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting, but
yeah.
But why?
And there was also a discussion on.
I've got that one. Don't
cover that one.
Good,
because I wanted to get to that. So just when we get to that, Adam also brought that one up. So.
Oh, fuck Adam. What would he know? There's an article from Steve Peters.
There is one from Steve Peters as well. And
ignore that like we normally do with Steve.
Yeah, it's too technical.
A nine-year-old
named Regina Wiley, who has become very popular with the brides that her dad shoots, and these brides are now all requesting young Regina to be the second photographer alongside her dad when her dad is shooting weddings. And I thought that's pretty epic. A nine-year-old.
Yeah, hang on a sec.
What?
So the whole thing.
Yes, it started when she was seven.
Yeah, but hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Follow her on Instagram. She's got seven posts on Instagram only.
Right.
Two of them are the same. So that's like six posts. One's a vase. That's like the five posts.
Okay.
The other ones are all the same wedding. So she's done one, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Looking at this, let's having a go at the kid, but maybe we're trying to build something out of this woman girl that she's kind of not.
Right.
And the examples they're using once again are all the same wedding.
Right.
So I don't know.
Okay.
Good on it if she takes long and stuff, but at the same time, I get why the photographer, why the wedding people want it, because it's cute. Oh, isn't it nice?
Yeah, exactly.
At the same time, maybe you don't really want that as a distraction for yourself as a wedding photographer. Because if your wedding photographer's being distracted by having to keep an eye on his kid,
is he
doing a great job of your wedding?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
But apparently so looking at the actual article as opposed to she has done a trash the dress shot.
Yep.
Shoot.
And it was because of that shot that her dad ended up getting a cotton carrier ambassadorship with Think Tank.
Really?
Apparently.
What the hell's a cotton carrier ambassador?
I have no idea.
That's a bag.
Probably.
It's a type of bag. It's a camera vest. There you go.
Right.
Got that. I personally highly recommend the Lowepro Street and Field camera vest.
But here's the thing that gets me. By age seven, she was shooting with a Canon 7D with a 70 to 200 mil lens. Most seven-year-olds couldn't pick up a 70 to 200 mil lens.
That's probably why she's now down to a Fuji XE1 18 mil lens. Because she was shooting with it, but the photos were crap. Yeah. Good on her and stuff.
Yep.
And things, but you know,
I would be interested to see whether she's still got an interest in it in another 18 months' time.
But also, if I set up a shot, and my daughter happens to be by me and she grabs a camera and goes bang, they're going to look pretty darn good too.
Yeah.
If I've set most of the settings, blah blah blah.
Yep.
I think it might be just a little bit of a storm in a teacup. But good on her though for getting out there. And I'd love her to prove me completely wrong and cranky and old and become one of the top 10 wedding photographers of the year voted by, I don't know, Horse and Hound magazine or something. No. And if you can you name the movie Horse and Hound? What movie is that from?
No idea.
Yeah, just check and see if the listeners know. Let's see who knows their chick flicks.
Horse and Hound.
Horse and Hound magazine.
Okay. Yeah.
And I expect Melania.
You're saying that was mentioned in a movie?
A very, very strongly mentioned in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I expect Melania to know at the very least.
Right.
There we go. So that's it from our list of listeners and the one piddly thing from yourself?
Yeah, that's two things from me. But anyway. But before we get on to your stuff,
yes,
I would like to remind everybody that this episode of Shutters Inc. is brought to us by the great people at Hedge for Mac.
Love them.
We do.
Love them.
Have you had a chance to try it out?
Not a chance. Okay. I was too busy watching the shows of that.
Okay, so as mentioned, this episode of Shutters Inc. is brought to you by the guys at HedgeForMac.com. Hedge is the fastest app for importing and backing up your media on OS X, whether it's photos, videos, or even audio. It is the simplest interface you'll find, yet it's very powerful underneath. One of the features that I think is absolutely awesome is its ability to import multiple sources, so multiple memory cards, and back them up to not just one location, but to multiple locations simultaneously. Now, even the free version allows you to do that. It'll only allow you to copy to two locations at once, where the paid version will allow you unlimited spots to back up to. You know, we've spoken in the past about how important it is to have three copies of your data. You know, the working copy on, your PC or your Mac, that you do all of your regular day-to-day work on. You should then have a local backup, on an external hard drive or something like that, somewhere else in your house. And then you should have a third backup that's off-site, so if your whole house gets trashed, God forbid, you've at least got an off-site backup. Well, the beauty of Hedge for Mac is that you can, even with the free version, back up to both that external hard drive and to a cloud service, because that's one of the other great features. Not only is there support for network-attached storage and RAID, but there is also support for backing up to the cloud. So you've got all your bases covered. And Hedge is built around a technology they call Fastlane. And basically, it is the fastest copy verification engine you'll find on OS X. It's optimized for files 100 megs and larger, and it's faster than Finder. So it's a really fast interface. Every file copied by Hedge is cross-verified with the original, and there is a scripting language support built in, which allows you to run scripts that can sort, transcode, rename, and tag your media after import. Pretty awesome product. Definitely check it out, hedgeformac.com/shuttersinc, and that will get you a 20% discount for exclusively for Shuttersinc listeners. So definitely go and check that out.
Well, I just downloaded it.
Good.
Go. I did it just like while it took. In fact, from when you started the advert,
yeah,
until you finished the thing, I downloaded the whole app.
Awesome.
And
so that's pretty quick.
Yeah, but now it won't open. I'm trying to upgrade to buy a license, and I should hit and register. That was a bit silly. No, it's not it. It's
but
me.
Did I? Didn't I send you the license key?
Yeah, but I hadn't done anything with it. It
right.
Was just
okay. But you do have it so that you can enter it.
Yeah, but I was just hitting the wrong button.
Okay.
I was wondering why hitting activate over and over again wasn't working when I should be hitting register over and over again.
Right.
Yeah. The definition of an idiot is?
Someone who does the same thing over and over and expects a different result?
Hello. And the photo would be right next to it. There we are. So in that time, I've successfully activated Hedge.
Fantastic.
There's little confetti flowing down my screens. And I am now good to go. So
next week you can tell us how it works.
So here we go. I'm going to do it live. I'm going to go source.
You know, I've already given them their 60 seconds.
Destination. Yeah, but this is good for our listeners.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Destination. I'm going to add the destination. Okay, I'm adding a destination. I'm going to go straight from my memory card, it's got 21 gig of data on it.
Right.
That have to be sitting in my, and I was going to go straight to my NAS connected hard drive via Wi-Fi.
Right. Can you maybe not transfer 21 gigs of files over your
now.
Wi-Fi?
It's gone now.
Oh, jeez.
There you go. So let's see how the bandwidth of the old video recording goes, shall we? But it's gone. How cool is that?
Awesome.
So in the space of time, I've downloaded, I've licensed it, I'm already downloading and edited and saving.
That's great.
It's bloody marvelous.
Oh, well, I seriously do look forward to hearing from you next week on how the whole process works.
If it's still downloading.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't have the fastest of Wi-Fi. I've got a few things on my little list today to talk about. Just a couple of bits, and then we can let people go home early, which would be nice for them.
Right.
Insta Museum.
Yes.
Turn your Instagram account into a museum, into an exhibition or
but
a gallery.
Can I walk through it, or is it... Oh.
Well, you can if you get your VR glasses on. You can. It's full. If you have VR glasses, you can walk around and look around.
Are you kidding?
I don't know. That might be just made up. I don't know. But I do. I've included my own personal fabulous museum gallery there for people to have a little gander.
That's awesome.
At the joyful stuff they're getting.
That's very funky. For those who haven't seen this, this is on Sketchfab, and basically it allows you to throw all your images in there, and it gives a 3D rendering of an art gallery type space, so it makes it look like all of your images have been printed large and are on the walls of an art gallery.
Yeah.
And you can spin it around with your mouse. That's groovy.
Yeah, you can. So I'm imagining as if you've got your little glasses or something, maybe.
Right.
Oh, that's it. View in VR. Look, there's a little tab there.
Oh, wow.
You can put on your glasses and look around like you were actually standing there.
Right.
I'll have to buy myself a cheap-ass pair of VR things and do that. Yeah.
I've got to say, the whole VR thing just does not appeal to me.
Doesn't it?
No. No interest in it at all.
Huh.
I don't know. Maybe it's because people just look like idiots with the bloody goggles on.
It would happen about in the streets.
I'm just waiting for someone to get mugged because they don't see it coming. But
some of the immersive games you can play.
Yeah.
You know. My problem is I'll be spinning around in a room trying to play a game and I'll fall over. I'll get dizzy and fall over.
Right, yeah.
That's bound to happen. People are going to start breaking legs and stuff or falling over their televisions and stuff. Yeah. So that's a bit dangerous. But, yeah, so there we go.
Yeah.
Insta Museum, kind of cool.
Excellent.
Remember we were talking the other week about Sigma's got a couple of problems with their some of their lenses working with the Pentax K1?
Yes.
Well, apparently they've got some problems with their Canon 1DX2 as Ooh. Well. With Ooh. Three of their lenses. It's like their, I think they're 20mm, they're 35mm, and they're 85mm.
Now, how could they have got this wrong? It's not like they're new to building lenses for Canon.
No, but the lenses are out, and then the cameras come out afterwards.
Right.
So whether there's something slightly different in the cameras, in the mounts, in the way, and that's causing the problem.
That strikes me as a failure on Canon's part to advise the third-party manufacturers that, hey, we're changing the spec.
Yeah, but if you already own the lens.
Yeah, I realise that.
And then you go buy the camera. Because yeah. you had the lens for a year.
Yeah.
But apparently there might be a firmware fix for the Canon ones.
How can you fix it with firmware if this is a physical interaction?
I would suggest that the problem isn't physical.
Okay.
It could be mental, like you.
But the other story, the Sigma lenses with yes. the Pentax K1, yes. that you were talk, that was about the rear yes. element of the right. lens yes. coming.
So that was a physical problem. So I don't think there's a firmware update for that.
No.
No. Because they didn't mention it in their article being right. a firmware update, but the Canon one seems to be something different.
Okay.
So it's not the same problem, it just happens to be another compatibility issue. Which is kind of odd.
Right.
So I just thought that was interesting. Instagram business profiles now have just started. So you can now have your business profile on Instagram, much like you do as a page on Facebook.
Right.
So all you photographers out there who have a photography business, you can actually have a full working business page now on Instagram, which sounds good.
Wow. Does Instagram allow you to write, you know, heaps and heaps and heaps of text?
Yep.
Okay.
Heaps.
So you could pretty much do away with a professional, you know, brucewilliamsphotography.com website.
Probably.
If you were doing this, you know,
full on. you could do like an Instagram page with just like, say if you do six different types of jobs.
Yep.
With just six photos.
Yeah.
The best one of each one of those and the blurb of what you do and the contact details if yeah. you want to. And it could be like a calling card.
Yeah.
And then you just hand out that little card to people. They can look it up online, bang, all the info's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it certainly could do.
Mm.
So that was that anyway. Perspective adjust on Photoshop.
Are we skipping the other thing?
We'll get to that. We'll do that in the end.
We'll get to that at the end. Okay.
So perspective adjust a small area of your photograph. So if you've done a photograph and there's just one area, one small, say there's a tree or a chimney or something in a small area of your photograph that's just a little bit out of whack because of, you know, perspective of your lens.
Right. Out of whack, what, vertically?
It might be vertically or it might be horizontally. It might just be skewed.
Right.
Weirdly, because of the angle of lens that you're using.
Mm.
But you don't want to adjust the entire image because the rest of the image is fine. It's just this one thing looks worse because of its shape or whatever it may be.
Yep.
Well, there's a good little thing I came across on Petapixel where it's a little tutorial.
Okay.
Which shows you how to fix just one very small part.
So using selective warp to straighten an area of the image without affecting the whole image?
Possibly.
Yeah. Okay.
So I thought that could be for people who like to fix stuff like that and maybe looking to improve their skills, that could be kind of useful.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly, you know, if you're obviously shooting with shorter focal lengths, like wide angle lenses, that becomes more and more of an issue.
Whatever, exactly. Yeah. So depends on the angles, but it might not be the whole image. So a lot of people know how to fix like an entire image.
Yep.
But to be able to fix just one, small portion of one or two centimeter portion of an image that needs fixing, is quite a bit more difficult because you fix that little area, and then other areas around it get skewed.
Don't line up anymore.
Well, So this is a kind of a cool little thing.
Okay.
And the last thing, I was actually looking. I thought I'd go back on Petapixel 1 year ago this week and see what was being talked about a year ago.
Oh, okay.
It'd be kind of a cool thing to go about a bit of retro, and I couldn't find anything interesting.
Right. Okay.
Maybe I have to go back 2 years. I was going to go back in a couple of different years, but I sort of ran out of time. But I did find this one thing a year ago that I didn't see. And it's a model release app. And I thought, well, a lot of people ask me all the time, what do you do about model releases?
Yep.
And I've always tried, I keep recommending this model release I've been using for a few years called iRelease.
Right.
But it's always been a bit, yeah, it does the job, but it's not ideal, it's not perfect, you know. Okay. And this one seems to be a little bit more encompassing in the fact that it has standard industry templates for people like Getty Images and Shutterstock and all these sort of people.
Oh, nice.
So you can actually use their requirements.
Yeah, right.
In the model release. So if you're shooting an image, oh, that's going to go great in Getty, bang. Yep. So it's a thing called Snapwire, and it's free. Which makes it sort of even, you know, even more better.
Yeah.
So it's a free app. And, you know, once again, you take a photo of the person you're shooting. They sign your screen.
Yep.
So you put all the details in there. And it's just a great way of, you know, keeping that sort of side of the business dealt
legit
with. Yeah. So just thought we'd put that there.
Nice.
And then finally, the thing that Mr. Davidson put up.
Yep.
And, but not until I'd already seen it.
Yeah.
A bit more McCurry bashing.
Yeah.
So, Steve McCurry, as we were talking, I think it was only last week or so,
yeah,
about how people, he's now a storyteller, not a photojournalist anymore.
Right.
Well, someone's gone and picked apart his Afghan girl from back in the day when it was became famous and showed that there's edits on that.
Yeah. This just strikes me as let's cut down the tall poppies syndrome.
Yeah. Let's do it.
You know?
Let's do it.
No.
Still, why not?
Because the guy was doing a job.
Yeah.
Which he was, you know, he was paid to shoot.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's shot great images over the course of his career. I'm sure not all of these modifications were his doing. They probably would have been the doing of his editors.
Yeah.
And the graphic artists working under those editors as well.
Yeah.
I just feel like this is a bunch of whiners complaining because someone made a successful career out of photography and had to...
How dare he?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm on Steve's side here. I don't think he did anything wrong based on what I've read in this article anyway. It just strikes me as a bunch of whingers.
Well, it depends on how you put yourself out there as a photographer, though. So he's always been happy to accept himself as a photojournalist and make his living and money as being a photojournalist for a long, long time. And photojournalism, you don't touch anything. You do not touch the image up. But that's the rigors of that particular calling of photography.
Yeah.
And as we've seen,
they're also giving him a hard time for having staged shots.
But once again, that's not photojournalism, is it? If you're staging shots, a photojournalist, and you're photographing what's happening, you're not setting stuff up to make it look worse than it maybe is. And this has been going on for quite a few years in war photography, where people have been staging shots and getting caught out for it. And we've seen that on quite a few of these competitions and photojournalism awards where, hang on, say that's not real, and getting pulled up for it. So once again, I don't have a problem with his images being doctored in any way, shape or form, but I do have a problem with people. And not saying this is him, but people in general go and say, oh, this is exactly what I saw, this is exactly what I shot, and, you know, this all happened exactly like I'd taken a photograph of. But then someone comes on and says, no, hang on a sec, you paid those guys $20 to run down that street doing that.
Yeah.
You know? My problem is with the ethics of the reality of an image. I don't really have a problem that in Afghan Girl, someone, the editor, the photo editor at National Geographic, got a bit of gunk out of the corner of the girl's eye.
Absolutely not. No, it's
I don't have a problem with that, or, you know, cleaning up other areas of the image. But I have a problem if stuff is portrayed as this is what the life was like, this is what she actually looked, you know, if it's sold as this is a completely untouched image. But as I said, you know, he may not have even noticed it's that insignificant a piece. But funnily enough, when that image, that photograph was used in the 100 best ever National Geographic Photos magazine, and it was on the cover, that bit of gunk was back in the photo.
Right.
That's what I find kind of interesting.
In the
issue that it's famous for, the gunk's been removed.
Yep.
In the issue celebrating that image, it's the other image.
Yeah, right, the original.
So somewhere on the line's kind of gone, hang on a sec, you know. And it's stuff like, and the guy's going, like, one of Steve McCurry's most famous images as well is this steam train going past the Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
Okay, great image. But what he fails to say is that the shot that you're seeing is when he had to ask the train to go back and come back and do it again because the first time he got the shots blurry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not really what happened because it's now the second time through. And can you stand on the front here for me and wave your flag and so on?
But
so,
see, I don't have a problem with that.
With staging photographs and calling them real?
No, I don't have a problem with that. Because the train goes past the Taj Mahal.
No, it didn't. It doesn't. It was being moved for some event or something. So
okay.
not a normal.
There was a reason for the train to be in front of the Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with him saying, hey, can you stand on the front there and hold your flag and do this kind of thing? Because to me, that's not a massive departure from the story. It's merely portraying the elements of the story in one shot that tells the story.
Yeah, but then you're a storyteller, not a photojournalist. When McCurry in McCurry's own TED talk a few years ago, he claims he strives always to capture things exactly as they are. Well, it's not if you ask a guy to stand on the front. Yeah. It's not a guy if you ask a guy who wouldn't normally be there to be there, maybe. Yeah, because that's not how things are. That's how you wanted it to be because it was more interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. How it was, well, this train went past and I got a blurry shot of it. Well, that's what it is. And if you're in, and we go all the way back to what's his name, who had the falling soldier shot from the Spanish.
Kappa.
Yeah. So, I mean, all the debate about whether that was real or staged.
Right.
Well, that's a big difference. If that guy's been asked to fall backwards like he pretended to be hit by a bullet.
Yeah.
Versus if he actually is a moment captured. That's a huge difference, staging a shot versus what actually happened. Because one, if you caught that moment, that's a phenomenal, incredible moment to have captured, and it's worthy of its lifelong journey as a photograph. Sure. If you ask some guy to fall over and you took his photograph, it's not what? You know what I mean? So, yeah, staging a photograph has a massive implication in photojournalism.
Yeah.
It has no different when I'm photographing a couple and say, can you just hold her head a bit closer to her, even though you wouldn't normally do that? Can you just, you know, pretend you like her for a few minutes? there's nothing wrong with that because that's storytelling, you know. Yeah. But if I'm trying to depict the harshness of life in India, well, I don't go and get, oh, look, do you mind taking your top off and going down playing in the dirt down there so I can take a photo of you playing in dirt?
Right.
If that's not what that person would normally be doing. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that's just an example. It's not saying someone's done that, but I'm sure people have. Whereas another one they're talking about in the same article is where there's a shot of this guy walking through floods in India with a sewing machine on his shoulders. All you can see is the head and sewing machine. Well, that was a horizontally shot image, and they've extended the water in the image to make it a vertical image to fit on the cover. I don't have a problem with that.
No, I don't have a problem with that either.
Because that's not that was actually happening. They've just put a bit more water around the edges.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the water wasn't there. They didn't put water that wasn't there there. And as far as he was in water, it wasn't walking through normal air.
It's not like they raised the water level
They put water
to cover him up.
In the middle of his knees. to his neck. But I would have a problem if Curry asked the guy to kneel down in the water.
Yeah.
So the water was up to his neck like that. When it wasn't in reality like that.
No, that would be a problem.
But that's a staging a shot, though, to make it more dramatic. That's the same slippery slope, though, can you stand in front of the train and hold that flag? Can you just kneel down the water so the water's a bit higher? Can you just hold that gun and fall over for a minute? So, but it's the same slippery slope.
I think it's a question of degrees, though, isn't it? And then that introduces the whole slippery slope argument.
But that's where the problem is. It's either all got to be real or you can't believe any of it.
Yeah.
That's where photojournalism has lived. I mean, people who've risked their lives. There's another journalist from NRP this week, died, a photographer died in Afghanistan this week again. He's out there risking his life to capture the real images of what's happening.
Right.
And he's lost his life doing that.
Yeah.
And for people to go, oh, yeah, but the photos aren't real anyway. But he's died for not real? No, he's died trying to capture real.
Yeah.
And there's other people out there going, I'll just fall over holding your gun. I'll take a photo of that from back of the hotel swimming pool. You know? Yeah. That's the problem. If photojournalism has to stand on its complete ethics of this is exactly what was happening. I want you to see this carnage in Rwanda. I want you to see what is happening in Iraq. I want you to see the poverty in this country. We haven't bandied. We haven't got a village of 20 starving children. We've got two kids from 10 different villages and brought them together so it looks worse. No, it's this is the reality of what's happening. We need you to believe it. Because if you don't believe the images, you're not going to have empathy. You're not going to have you're not going to have belief. You're not going to have worry and maybe trying to change a situation. Governments won't do things differently if they don't see the images. Remember, the images, people can write a story saying, oh, yeah, it was really bad over there. There's guns going off everywhere. But you show a bit of video footage of the same thing and people pay attention. You show photos of people getting shot. In reality, people pay attention. So unfortunately, for photojournalism, it has to be, right, not, oh, can you send the train back and make it come past again because I stuffed it up. So it all depends how you market yourself. If you're a photojournalist and now he claims to be a storyteller, when did that happen?
Yeah.
When did you transition from this actually happened to I'm now setting stuff up? So, yes, I agree. There is a whole lot of bashing. And this is not necessarily a dig at Steve McCurry at all. I don't know him, don't really care to know him. But this is about that style of photography, that genre of photography and its ethics.
Right.
It's becoming so diluted that it's not going to have any meaning anymore, and that's important that it still has meaning.
Yeah.
So up yours and your tall poppy syndrome stuff. Yeah. the people who have the biggest draw of an image, if people who are famous for their images have the most people viewing their images when they post something, if their photojournalists have the most to risk, and they're risking the most if they fake anything.
Right.
Because they had the if I did a photojournalist shot and it was real, 500 people might see it. Let's say if I did a photojournalist shot and it was and I faked it a bit, 500 people see it. Not really going to change too much. If a high end figure like McCurry does it, and 10 million people see that image, well, that can have a bigger impact.
Yeah,
for better or worse. So the higher you are up in that field, the more you've got to keep that rigidness of not bending the rules. If she's got a bit of gunk in the corner of her eye, leave the gunk in.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't have a say in that, he might not have even noticed it himself.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see that National Geographic have a different image on the 100 cover than they did. So that shows to me that they realize at some point that something's not quite kosher.
Mm. Interesting.
That's my take. Be interesting to see if anyone else feels any differently, if anyone's got anything else to say. Because, I'll just keep beating the story, beating out on you until you agree with me anyway. So.
There was talk a couple of years ago now about, I don't know who was going to try and enforce this or how they were going to try and make it law, about getting magazine publishers to offer full disclosure of any alterations made to an image.
Yeah.
I would love to see that happen. I don't think it'll ever will happen, though.
No. Well, once again, I mean, do we need to, if it's a front cover of Vogue, yes, we took 47,312 fine hairs off her face.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily need to, we don't need that. But yeah, okay, this is a shot of war-torn country X.
Yeah.
And, we've montaged a different sky in the background and put in five people down the laneway and this explosion going off in the background wasn't there either, that stuff needs to be pointed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an homage to war as opposed to a photo of war. Homage! So,
Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice way to finish the episode and a bit of actual serious photography talk.
Yeah.
Once again, I'd like to apologize to the listeners. Next week, we'll be back to regular programming.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
You too. And everybody, take care.
Yep.
Be kind to each other.
Yep.
And stuff.
We'll talk to you then. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
Another AudioTeo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.